The impact of the musket ball shocked Kane. However, thanks to the high-tech polymers of the Shadow Suit, his remarkable reflexes, and the relatively soft, primitive lead musket ball, the gunshot only managed to raise a tiny bruise on his pectoral muscle. Kane's sleek, wolf-like frame darted through the peppering cloud of poorly aimed fire, seeking him out. Dropping into a shoulder roll, the ex-magistrate ducked the final volley of black powder shots. The ancient, simple weapons couldn't be reloaded by the creatures who barely had the presence of mind to aim them. Unfortunately for Kane, the gleaming points of a dozen bayonets glared at him under pairs of feral yellow eyes. Their sharpness and the berserk strength of their wielders would overwhelm the protective qualities of Kane's shadow suit. Kane fired the Copperhead submachine gun, burying small-caliber rounds into naked, scale-encrusted chests. Two of the mutants dropped their bladed muskets and tumbled into lifeless tangles of gnarled limbs. The suddenly inert hordlings formed a barrier to their brethren's ferocious charge, turning two dead bodies into five more stumbling, disarmed mutants. The dozen growling creatures dropped in number to five active combatants, but their bayonets still thirsted for Kane's blood. Kane slung the Copperhead to his shoulder, then he pivoted and engaged his Sin Eater. The folding machine pistol launched a pair of 240-grain super-heavy slugs that blew through mutated chests as if they were soggy slices of bread. The last mutant lashed out with his bayonet, but Kane batted the blade away with a sweep of the Copperhead's barrel. With a sharp kick to the mutant's knee, Kane dropped him to the rocky hillside. A kick to the temple put the mutant out, just in time for Kane to whirl back to the group of sprawled hordlings that were getting back on their feet. Their yellow eyes flashed angrily in the starlight, muskets held like spears and clubs. Kane whipped his Sin Eater around. The scaled half-men writhed under the rain of smashing slugs, their bodies wrecked by Kane's marksmanship. He turned his attention back toward Grant and Bridget. The pair was back-to-back, Bridget using Grant's Copperhead, while the massive ex-magistrate attended to the charging swarm on his flank with his Sin Eater. The vicious volleys sliced into the savage marauders charging down the slopes. Kane slowly realized that Domi was nowhere to be seen, and he didn't hear her on his contact.
Oh, damn it.
Out in the open and heavily outnumbered, Grant and Bridget were hard-pressed by the surging reptilians. Domi, at least, had the advantage of broken terrain behind the hill crests to give her an edge over her opponents. Charging, Kane raced to bolster the defensive line held by his two companions. He hoped like hell that Domi was okay. After Domi burned off the first seven fat rounds in her compact combat master, she decided it was time to engage in a strategic retreat.
Catch me! Yeah!
With a leap, Domi launched herself down the hillside, luring the massive nine pursuing hordlings away from Grant and Bridget. If getting the muties away from her friends meant she had to play the wounded bird to draw the cats away from the nest, then so be it. With all the speed in her short legs, the albino girl opened up her lead over the bayonet-armed reptilians to 30 yards, far enough to give her some breathing room, yet close enough for her to be an enticing target for the misshapen lizard men. Domi paused to eject her empty magazine and shove another stick of seven slugs into the butt of the booming little Detonix 45. A particularly energetic and nimble mutant leaped to within 15 yards of Domi. With one shot, she dumped his corpse onto the rocky hillside. A cavernous chest wound further deformed his mutant body.
Good to go.
Domi raced on to keep the hordlings from surrounding and trapping her in a killing box. The hilly land, with its sparse brush, maze of boulders, and jutting rock faces, was not that much different from the inhospitable, craggy terrain of the Bitterroot Mountains. Domi dodged and leapt through it, completely at home. A mutant raced along a hilltop to her right, with his brothers who strung out behind them. Domi fired a shot at the reptilian mutant, but missed the gnarled hordling by yards. The half-man threw his musket like a javelin. She swerved, barely avoiding the wood and steel missile. Her lead over the reptilians evaporated as she took a spinning crash into the gravel. Thankfully, she still held onto her 45, and she aimed it at the hilltop mutant who was running straight at her, fangs bared and claws splayed. Braced and stationary, Domi's finger tightened on the trigger of her gun, when the mutant seized up and exploded, detonating 7 yards from Domi. One moment, the misshapen creature was charging. The next, his internal organs were externalized as a cloud of red, sticky mist. The guns didn't make the familiar sounds of Domi's friend's weapons. Before she could send a call over her contact, clones charged out from behind a boulder. Domi swung the detonics toward them and pounded two powerful bullets into one of the mutants, stopping him cold. The other leapt high and javelined his bayoneted musket at her face. She rolled to one side, barely in time to avoid the blade. Domi scrambled to her feet and whipped the steel muzzle of her pistol across the mutant's jaw, shattering it. The mutant collapsed into a nerveless, unconscious puddle of twitching flesh. The remaining five creatures lurched into view all at once, hopping atop boulders. They were spread out, so she couldn't shoot them all, even if she had five bullets left in her gun. As they grinned maliciously, fangs shimmered in the starlight. Domi curled her lip in defiance. Detonics in one hand, she slid her knife from its scabbard, her ruby-red eyes staring with the same rage as the pairs of soulless yellow orbs that sized her up.
Wanna eat? Come and get it!
Suddenly, all five pairs of yellow-slitted eyes widened with horror. Domi risked a glance at what stopped them and stared at the shining mechanoid warrior fast approaching the battle. The massive, gleaming mechanoid leaped into the air. A wind rose over Domi, the breeze so strong that it flicked the head wrap off her bone-colored hair, the rag fluttering away uselessly. The precise landing of 3,000 pounds of mechanized warrior shook Domi almost off her feet. It had landed on one mutant, and twisted limbs poked up between the giant's metal toe claws. With a grace belying its enormous bulk, the robot lashed out with long hydraulic piston arms. It quickly snatched up two mutants from their perches atop boulders. Powerful, crushing fingers closed on their toy-like little bodies, gore vomiting between gigantic metal fingers. A fourth hordling launched at the mechanized warrior. Domi snapped up her pistol and blew the creature out of the air. Two 45 caliber slugs cutting it down in mid-flight. The robot goddess whirled at the sound of gunshots and watched the reptilian clone flop dead on the ground. Red camera lenses tightened in focus, examining the young woman she'd come to rescue.
Lower the weapon.
Not on your life.
Why not?
I'm not wrapped in metal. Hey, one's getting away!
The mechanoid swiftly turned, following the flash of movement as the last mutant fled with a speed born of pure terror. Her shoulder guns chattered to life, ripping out streams of bullets that sliced the misshapen horde clone to ribbons.
Thanks for that.
I'm not your enemy. Thanks for your help. You speak English.
All robot pilots do. But you, where are you from? Where'd you get that gun? And what's that uniform you're wearing?
Domi looked down at her pistol, realizing that the flood of the pilot's questions were more than she could easily explain.
My stuff's from a lot of places. I'm from America, from a place called Cerberus.
Cerberus? Did you come along?
Three friends came with me and... Oh, shit, back that way!
Artemis's robot cameras whirred, looking toward the direction that Domi was starting in.
Wait, I hear the fighting. Climb on!
Climb on?
The robot warrior extended a powerful, blood-slicked metal hand toward Domi.
My way's faster, trust me!
Domi looked at the pulped remains of the mutants that had been crushed in the enormous digits.
You gotta be kidding!
I won't hurt you, and we need to get to your friends quickly.
Domi grabbed onto the huge thumb with both hands and hauled herself up into the main joint that formed the robot's palm. With ridiculous ease, the robot warrior lifted her up to the gigantic shoulder gear housing for the robot's left gun.
Name's Domi!
Diana. Artemis, while in this battle suit.
What's wrong?
Nothing. We have to reach your friends. I'll try to explain later.
Okay.
Hang on tight!
Domi wrapped her arms around the steel, gear-shaped shoulder armor without protest. Moments later, the albino understood why, as massively powerful leg hydraulics flexed, then sprung, launching both robot and girl skyward. He had named himself Zeus when he had been remade as the first of the robot pilots of New Olympus. It was an identity he had folded himself completely into, a stark contrast to his cold and clinical title of Thurmond, Magistrate of Cobaltville. As a magistrate, Thurmond had no given name, only his family title, an appellation that mentally conditioned him to surrender his individuality in the service of the program of unification. Identity subsumed behind the faceless black carapace helmet, the magistrate was just another selfless drone. the latest addition in a lineage of protective knights who defended the Vill's status quo. Renaming himself was one thing, but the affectionate nickname of Zoo, bestowed upon him by his subordinates, was a title he wore with loving pride. Ever since he was assigned, along with fellow magistrate Danton, to Dr. Helena Garthwaite for the expedition to Greece, Zoo had lived a whole new lifetime he never imagined. Helena had been dispatched by Baron Cobalt, partially because the Baron wanted to break in a new lover, and partially because Helena had promised him that she had discovered the clues to an amazing new technology that would grant Cobalt an advantage over his fellow barons. The expedition was a harrowing journey across the wastelands of post-apocalyptic America, over the tumultuous Atlantic Ocean, and a trek through the wreckage of southern France until they finally reached the Find. Standing over it now, even in the immense 15-foot mobile armor, Zoo felt tiny. The Find was at the bottom of a mile-deep fissure that had been cracked open by an Earthshaker bomb. The Earthshaker was a buried hydrogen bomb designed to cause enormous seismic trauma to a countryside, detonating with enough force to break open massive canyons, flatten mountains, or hurl flatlands into mile-high plateaus. Just another of humankind's wonders created in the service of self-destruction, as opposed to the mechanical mobile armor Helena had discovered in the Find. The skeletons were designed as multi-use animatronic frames, as capable of being common workers as they were unstoppable fighting mechanisms. Helena figured out a way for them to house a human warrior, but only if the pilot was smaller than 5 feet in height due to the construction of the torso framework. The powerful Earthshaker had opened the crack down to the mile-deep ancient Anunnaki cavern and rendered vast stretches of Greek countryside inland seas. Inside the Find, after 3 days of climbing and battling past territorial-scaled mutants, Helena, Thurmond, and Danton had discovered the prize she had been expecting, as well as hints of a secret world history that no one could have imagined. Helena, now titled Hera, had constructed the theory based on historical records uncovered among the ruins and remembered pillow talk from her time with Baron Cobalt. While it seemed incongruous to Zoo at first, there was no denying that he was now inside a man-machine interface that was far more than the sum of its parts. With a single bound, he began his descent down into the crack in the world, hopping like a spider from cliff to cliff, secondary orichalcum claws securing him to a rocky ledge with more than enough strength to counter the downward momentum of 3,000 pounds of mechanoid. The zigzag hopscotch down the sheer walls of the crevasse turned the mile-deep descent into a gleeful ride that took only minutes rather than an arduous, life-threatening trek. Zoo grinned with delight as freefall rendered him weightless, and the hydraulic extension of his body danced through the air in showy somersaults. Landing in a crouch, the secondary orichalcum skeleton and its Anunnaki-designed hydraulics cushioned what would have been a skeleton-shattering impact. Zoo's heart felt light, the journey a cleansing experience that washed away the poisonous dread in his spirit. Zoo looked into the gaping black entrance of the Find, the cavern that was also the back door into the Tartarus clone vats. The huge mechanoid moved through the massive cavern. Zeus didn't really envy Thanatos his underworld existence, cushy job or no. Slowly, he made his way back to the cavern where the mutant horde was created. Feral yellow eyes blinked in the darkness, but the mutants didn't dare make a move against the hated thunder god that strode through the cave. The bearded mechanical giant walked with strength and confidence that no scrawny little reptilian creature would be able to harm him, even if he did summon up the courage to launch his minuscule frame against the king of the mechanical warsuits. Zoo ignored them, walking into the domain of his goddess queen's publicly sworn enemy, Thanatos. Helena Garthwaite and her two magistrate bodyguards, Thurmond and Danton, had been raised up with the wonders of the Find, from seekers of mythology to the very beings of legend. The technology that would have allowed Baron Cobalt an edge to sweep aside his hybrid brothers and assume the throne of Lord of the Earth instead became the forge in which Hera Olympiad, Zeus, and Thanatos were born, the core of a new pantheon that would be the first step on a ladder of continental expansion. Zoo had remade himself the most, going under the carving saw and the spine-violating implant of the cyberport that left him legless, half a man, but only when he was away from the magnificent Orichalcum skeleton and its steel armor. His mobile suit was the finest of the cache of 50, and undeniably he was the mightiest and greatest of the robot god warriors.
Thanatos!
The clones seemed confused, as if there was no one to give them focus or purpose. Normally, Thanatos would have strode out, greeting his brother. Something alerted Zhu's instincts, informing him that there was danger in the air, a doubt that had started when the metal-armored reptilian was discovered among the mutant hordlings. His light amplification optics kicked in, minor illuminators giving the lenses something to target. They picked up a massive silvery disc, taller than the mechanized warsuit, and so wide that it had to have entered the chasm sideways to land. Zhu couldn't find a single aperture, no hatches or thrust nozzles on its smooth, mirror-polished surface. Something crunched under his clawed foot, and Zhu looked at the ground, seeing the charred husks of mutants ankle-deep around him. The piles of dead had been incinerated by some form of high-energy weapon, and from the number of corpses, they had to have surged in violent, desperate defense of their cave.
Than, are you all right?
Datton is well.
The address of Thanatos by his old name sent an urgent jolt of menace running up Zhu's spine. The 15-foot robot genuflected, dropping to one knee in submission. It was an old reflex, stretching back to his days as a magistrate.
Baron Cobalt, my lord.
Please, Thurmond. Or shall I call you Zeus? I, too, have a new identity, my loyal subject.
Lord Baron?
Zhu finally focused on movement in the darkness. It was a 7-foot-tall figure, a silhouette of physical perfection clad in cobalt-blue shimmering metal armor that was as finely wrought as Hera's silver skin. The Baron Cobalt he remembered was only a shade over 5 feet and willowy, while this newcomer was carved from slabs of lean muscle and long, straight limbs. The rippling musculature under the metal, skin-conforming armor was a far cry from the frail leader he'd remembered. Finally, the stranger's face came into view of his night optics, an angelic face sculpted in reptilian skin, beautiful and menacing in the same instant.
Please, Zhu, call me Lord Marduk.
Inside the metal god's cockpit, Thurman's jaw went slack in awe. Miles away, another former Cobaltville magistrate's jaw dropped in surprise. Kane gaped at the sight of a gigantic mechanoid bounding over the crest of a hill, Domi clinging to its shoulder and hooting in excited delight. The paltry remnants of the Hordling Marauders, already in disarray from the concentrated firepower and fighting coordination of the Cerberus Explorers, completely lost their nerve at the sight of a more familiar but no less implacable enemy. Against efficient human warriors and a towering mechanoid, with their overwhelming numbers depleted, the reptilian clones were helpless. A wild panic broke through the half-dozen remaining ambushers as they scurried toward the nearest bolt holes. Artemis landed 10 yards from the Cerberus explorers, then set her hand on the soil of the valley in order to give Domi a means to scramble down off her shoulder.
Look what I found!
Kane looked over the giant robot and shook his head in disbelief.
Well, if you promise to clean up after it and walk it every day...
You know what I mean.
Kane nodded, then looked up at the 15-foot Titan.
Hi. We saw your kind in a satellite photo, and we decided to drop on by.
Artemis straightened, even though she knelt to stay more or less level with the humans.
There are still satellites up there?
Kane was surprised at the youth and femininity of the robot's voice.
Yeah. Where we come from, we're lucky to have access to satellite imagery.
Wow.
The metal goddess looked up, staring at the starry veldt above. Finally, she pried her attention from the heavens and returned to the four companions.
Domi and I have already made our introductions. I'm Artemis.
Artemis, the Greek goddess of the moon and the hunt. In Roman myth, she was also known as Diana.
Diana's her real name, too! She helped me out against the Scalies.
Grant flipped up the visor on his helmet, amused by the giddy joy in the albino girl's voice.
Domi, you okay?
Domi wiped her mouth and came away with flakes of dried blood.
Oh, I slipped and got into some hand-to-hand with one of the muties. Did you see me flying?
Grant gave the girl a calming squeeze on her shoulder.
Looks like fun, but I'll stay at the stick of a helicopter.
This is better!
Dom is right. My real name is Diana Pontopoulos.
I'm Bridget Baptiste. This is Kane, and that is Grant. My comrades and I are from the Cerberus Redoubt, and despite our guns, we're here on a mission of peace and exploration. We come as potential friends and allies.
I'd have to say bringing the arsenal was a good idea. Just the four of you managed to devastate a 50-strong raider squadron. The Tartarus vats will have to work extra hard to replenish their ranks.
The mention of Tartarus brought a glance of recognition among the four Cerberus companions.
Did I say anything wrong?
No, not at all. Where we initially came from, Cobaltville, the Tartarus pits were the slums under the main city.
However, Greek mythological terms are quite commonly encountered, as the name of our own redoubt, Cerberus, makes apparent.
Cobaltville. That is where Hera Olympiad and Zeus came from. And Hera was worried about her past catching up with her.
Well, maybe it has. This isn't exactly a social call. We only took notice of this place when our satellites picked up traces of an Overlord dropship.
Overlords? What are those?
The Overlords are entities who are a threat to humanity. In their previous incarnation, they ruled 9 cities across America as barons before an evolutionary signal returned them to their original Anunnaki forms.
Wait. Hera and Zeus are from Cobaltville? Grant, I don't remember anyone who could have been named Zeus.
Me either, but I do know 8 years ago, Cobalt picked out a pair of his best magistrates to accompany some white coat on an expedition. Well, maybe not his best. I'm kind of fuzzy on who was sent.
You can't remember your comrades?
Oh, come on, it's been 8 years. And even if I did have an eidetic memory like yours, I've taken a lot of knocks to the old cabbage.
So would you know Zoo when you saw him?
Yeah. Maybe even Kane would. But he was a little young and wet behind the ears when those guys went out. He barely remembered my name back then.
Artemis tilted her head in a quizzical angle at the quartet, joking around with one another.
The Overlord dropship, it wouldn't have crew members that wore skin-tight, flexible armor and have scaly faces.
Yes, the Nephilim. So you have seen them?
Eris killed one of them yesterday. There's a ship full of them?
Which is why we rushed over here. If there's at least one Overlord alive, both of us are going to have to pitch in and keep them from grabbing power. Those snake faces are cunning devils, and they have a lot of nasty tricks up their sleeves.
Like wrist blasters. Blew the thermal axe right out of Ares' hand.
Which is why we're here. It's a bit selfish. You scratch our backs and we'll scratch yours. But it's a first step. A universal show of friendship. Speaking of which, English?
Domi wondered that too. I speak English because it's a common trade language for the Mediterranean. As well, all the members of Strike Force Olympus speak English, thanks to Hera's and Zeus's tutelage.
Not complaining. Otherwise, anything you said would just be
Greek to you.
This is why I'm the one who should do the talking. Don't mind Kane too much. I just bring him along to kill annoying pests.
Fighting fire with fire.
Smartass.
The two ex-magistrates seemed bolstered by some hope given to them in the robot's story. Maybe the Cerberus explorers had lucked into a situation where they'd discovered a relatively peaceful society. Kane eyed Artemis thoughtfully, his expression growing serious once more.
I don't know if anyone in your command has psychic abilities, but I had a momentary flash when we were passing through what apparently was an ancient oracle.
Not to my knowledge. What was it?
A weapon in the form of lightning or some kind of electric ray. I'm not sure if your group takes premonitions seriously, but I've encountered enough strange situations.
Kane, I'm an amputee riding in the chest of a 15-foot-tall combat robot dating back at least 3,000 years, battling hordes of cloned mutants who now apparently have the support of ancient reptile gods who fly around in spaceships and wear impenetrable metal.
You'll take my flash seriously.
Yes!
So, all that remains now is the take us to your leader request. Though it might get cramped if all four of us ride on your shoulders like Domi did.
Domi grinned, enjoying the prospect of riding to Artemis's base on the robot's shoulders.
Then let me call a ride for the rest of you. Never let it be said that the Greeks don't know how to spoil a visitor. We'll hold off on the gifts because we know our reputation in that regard. Artemis to base. I've conducted a first contact with travelers from America, requesting permission to bring them in under hospitable security protocols and for escort from Ares and his patrol.
You said amputee. You cut off your legs to be a robot pilot?
Only one, Bridget. The other...
The red camera eyes in their helmet slit moved, and the head turned to look at the bullet-riddled corpses of the Tartarus marauders.
Oh.
I take it there's no shortage of volunteers.
No, just a shortage of suits. I'm sure your satellites have seen the layouts of the towns and farms around this area. High walls and sniper towers where farmers are doled out the few bits of firearms technology that we can spare.
Other than the robots, you don't have much high tech?
Radios, and we have a small factory that turns out cased rifle ammunition and simple bolt-action rifles to supply the civilian populace. And we have stockpiles for our robot shoulder guns.
Kane noted the wicked wedge-shaped knuckles on her hands.
So you can serve ammo with hand-to-hand?
Yeah.
So Zhu is an amputee as well? Was he injured by the mutants?
No. He was the first volunteer. That is why he is our Zeus. He sacrificed two healthy legs to be our defender.
Grant and Kane exchanged a glance. Despite the courage of some of the magistrates they had faced, Zhu's gesture was surprising.
Grant, do you remember anyone willing to sacrifice like that?
Hell, back when we were mags, we did stuff we weren't proud of. It took seeing another way of life to make us what we are.
Point made, partner. What's that?
That's your eye. Ares and two Spartans, it looks like.
Kane finally spotted the leader of the trio, a massive robot with a metal razor fin bisecting his helmet. Ares skidded to a halt. He swiveled his hand in a salute, bowing his mohawked helmet toward Artemis.
You rang for some noble steeds, Artie?
That's Ares, and Spartans 10 and 34. Ares is a hero pilot like me.
The officer corps. When Greeks need help, they call a Spartan. When Spartans need help, they call us.
And when we need help, we call Zeus.
Right.
The imposing robot strode toward Bridget and ran his metal fingertips along his domed helmet.
Milady, I would be honored if you would ride my shoulder back to New Olympus.
Bridget raised an eyebrow, then smiled.
Absolutely, Ares.
Kane rolled his eyes as Spartan 10 extended a hand for him to climb up to a robotic shoulder.
Has he got a shovel attachment to lay out that crap?
Artie's a little too polite to let you guys know that Ares a horny little stump.
Kane grinned and wrapped an arm around Spartan 10's shoulder gear.
Wing woman?
That job takes two of us.
Spartan 34 waved at Kane as Grant settled onto her unisex robot shoulder.
Finally, someone whose reputation competes with Kane's.
Oh, some days it's not worth leaving the redoubt.
Oh, don't stay home and deny each of us the pleasure of having a hunk sitting on her shoulder.
Yeah, feel free to come back anytime.
Kane smiled down at Spartan 10. Together, the mechanical warriors and their Cerberus Explorer riders headed toward the new Olympian base. Zeus felt relief brush cool fingers through him when Thanatos finally emerged from the shadows near Lord Marduk. There were bruises on his face, but he was unharmed, despite being under the protection of a 6-foot Nephilim. They stood near, but Thanatos wasn't bound.
Thanatos, what happened?
I didn't know who they were when the silver disc first landed. I thought they were aliens, invaders, and I ordered my hordlings to attack. There was fighting everywhere until Lord Marduk bellowed out who he was, and everyone just froze.
Zeus eyed his friend. Suspicion settled like a stone in his stomach. He wondered if Thanatos was speaking freely. Lord Marduk glanced around casually.
A wonderful little empire you have carved out here. Helena has done me proud.
Zhu watched the pacing overlord as he surveyed the breeder vats in appreciation.
We tried to contact you. However, the atmosphere and radiation zones made it difficult to get a signal around the world.
I believe you, Zeus. The technology you had, even the technology you currently possess, is wholly insufficient for reliable intercontinental communications. Sending a messenger would have been difficult as well, because after all, it took you how long to get here? A year?
14 months. Atlantic was a nightmare.
I have seen the rough waters from the safety of my dropship. I agree. Traversing those waves would have made any journey a life scramble. Even if you did get back, it really would not have mattered to me. My sandcats and deathbirds were as efficient as these old Anunnaki warbots, at least with the features and add-ons Helena was able to decipher and adapt. More recently, I had hordes of Nephilim equipped with asp blasters and airborne dropships of considerable firepower at my command.
Had?
Yes.
So now you need us?
You magistrates were always a perceptive lot. Sadly, the greed of my sister, Lilitu, whom you knew as the Baron Beausoleil, has deprived me not only of my armies of minions and fleet of dropships, but of the mightiest weapon I'd ever beheld.
But there are more weapons in the find.
Yes. Helena came here at my behest. Not only was I getting bored with her, but I truly was seeking a considerable advantage over my brother barons. Now, with the losses we all have incurred, I seek my old toy chest.
Zhu looked at the illuminated vats where a new generation of reptilian humanoids was brewing.
So you'll be able to construct more of your soldiers?
Nephilim, yes, I will. But they are secondary to what treasures I had deposited here.
And what about us? What about New Olympus?
I seek not to demote any of you. You may still remain Zeus, Thanatos, and Hera, the lords of this kingdom. As ruler of the Earth, I realize that I will have to delegate my authority. Even Zeus required subjects in Olympus, did he not? In cooperating with me, helping me to defeat my brothers, you will find me a generous benefactor.
But what if Helena, doesn't want to play second fiddle to you, Lord Marduk?
Marduk's smile contained no warmth or joy. His needle-sharp teeth would have been frightening on their own, but the demeanor of the Anunnaki overlord before him made Zhu tremble in his pilot's couch.
In that instance, you will have to find yourself another Hera.
Hera paced, her thoughts racing. The radio report of first contact put Hera on edge. That feeling of unease was compounded by the appearance of an alien soldier among Danton's clone force. She hadn't been able to get into radio contact with Danton, hence the need to send Zeus out to the Tartarus find. It was risky to dispatch him, but using an unsecured radio or an open communication hardline was out of the question. She, Zhu, and Danton Thanatos were the only three who were privy to the knowledge that the Tartarus hordlings were at Hera's beck and call. The clone vats were her source for an easily generated bogeyman designed to give the heroic robot champions a powerful challenge, their raison d'être. Now, everything had grown more complicated. First, there was the body of the alien humanoid, a creature resembling the Anunnaki from the ancient computer records in the find. Now, there were newcomers who claimed to be exiles from Koboldville. For the first time since she'd donned the environmentally impervious silver skin, beads of nervous sweat formed on her smooth brow, and a chill ran up and down her spine. Hera twisted her fingers together, absently. A lot of things were happening quickly, and she simply didn't have enough information to make a snap judgment. Artemis had the right idea. Hospitable security precautions were the order of the day. The stranger's movements would be monitored, and they would be escorted through New Olympus without actually subjecting them to imprisonment or total disarmament. There would be the implication of trust. Perhaps under the illusion of freedom, the four strangers would betray their hand as saboteurs, thieves, or assassins. Hera was glad that her robot pilots were so selflessly loyal to her. Her surgical procedures enabled her to hand-pick only the most trusted and dedicated to pilot her mobile armor units. She'd specifically redesigned the cybernetic interface module to accommodate those who would otherwise be helpless cripples outside of the mighty war robots. It was ingenious that people were willing to drastically mutilate themselves for a greater cause. Then again, the horrors of the clone master Thanatos and his Tartarus mutants were inspiration enough for a full-fledged recruitment drive. Revenge for personal injury or lost loved ones and selfless duty to protect family and country were powerful motivations for her elite robot pilots. In the meantime, Hera had her invincible, heroically noble heroes who were practically helpless when not guiding their 1.5-ton war suits against the implacable foe. If they should grow suspicious and turn against her, Hera easily had the means to eliminate a legless cripple confined to a wheelchair. A preoperative volunteer, one of the Praetorian soldiers who made up the conventional military staff of New Olympus, stood in the doorway, interrupting her worries of plots and counterplots.
"Milady."
He was clad head to toe in copper and leather armor, resembling both the robot Spartan drones and the baronial magistrates that she was familiar with from Cobaltville. However, instead of the high-tech Sin-Eater, the soldier was armed with a bayonet-tipped, bolt-action rifle, a crude, easily produced weapon that helped the Greeks of New Olympus feel as if they had a say in their own livelihood.
"The travelers have arrived?"
"Yes, I will accompany you to the hangar, my queen."
"Are the preparations for the meeting hall and the guest quarters complete?"
"Yes, my queen."
Hera strode out into the hallway, her majestic demeanor returning as she performed the duties of her regal station.
"The meeting hall is fully stocked with a welcome meal, and off-duty personnel have been assigned to make it feel more festive. The observers and electronic surveillance equipment are also in place for the 2 guest apartments."
"Excellent."
Hera nodded, a smile spreading across her lips. It was good to be in charge again. Kane was impressed as the giant hangar doors swung open, a massive pair of metal lips peeling apart to reveal a huge maw in the side of the mountain. The open doors exposed 2 lines of 15-foot-tall bronze robot warriors standing at attention. The walls of mechanoid giants formed a coppery corridor that led down to a tall, seemingly naked, animated statue of a goddess coated in gleaming silver with threads of gold. Spartan 10 knelt and allowed Kane to climb down her arm to the ground. The other robots did the same for his companions. Grant gave Domi a tap on the shoulder.
"You were right. That was fun."
"Told ya."
Domi's cheeky grin faded as she turned and stared at the gauntlet of mobile armor suits standing at attention in the hangar.
"Oh boy. Brigid, look at that.
Honor guard or death trap?"
"They're watching us. Same way we welcome any visitors to Cerberus."
"So it's both. They want us to know that if we misbehave, we're pulp."
2 human soldiers with metal breastplates walked up to them.
"Please surrender your rifles. You may retain your sidearms, however."
Kane looked over to Grant, then shrugged. It wasn't as if the Copperhead SMGs would provide any advantage to the 2 ex-magistrates in the event of a conflict with 25 towering robot warriors. Still, Kane was glad to keep the reassuring weight of his Sin-Eater on his forearm. Grant looked relieved as well. The guards took the rifles, then pivoted to face the silver goddess at the far end of the robotic gauntlet.
"Follow us, sirs and madams."
The Cerberus explorers shared a bemused look, then followed the leather and metal-clad soldiers.
"They look familiar."
"Budget-rate magistrate armor. Leather and copper instead of polymer and carbon fiber. Seems as if Hera knew a good design when she saw it."
Grant made a face, remembering how ill-fitting magistrate armor plates had pinched and chafed on him.
"Good is relative."
"Oh my God."
"What?"
"The silver skin put me off for a moment, but that's Helena Garthwaite from the Archivist Division. She specialized in archaeological research, but she was a polymath in regards to the sciences. See, Grant, some of us remember our co-workers."
"La-di-fucking-da. In our division, you knew your partner and you recognized other mags by the uniform. Socializing wasn't encouraged, and everything was need to know."
The 4 explorers looked at the silver and gold-armored goddess standing before them. She was a curvaceous woman, statuesque in height, with her hair hidden under a skull cap of the same liquid polished metal that made up the rest of her skin. The only part of her visible was a regal, unlined face with cold black eyes and a wide, sensuous mouth. She stood, her head tilted back, chin raised, though it was not as if she was exposing her throat to attack, the shimmering armor skin extending all the way to the tip of her chin, forming the bottom of the metallic frame for her beautiful face. Kane could hazard a guess at Hera's hair color, as her slender eyebrows were light wisps of blonde hair. She stood upon a 3-step dais, thus allowing her to tower over the newcomers to the hangar.
You may bow your heads in deference to our respected queen, Hera Olympiad, savior of the Greeks, Lord High Scientist, and Supreme Arbiter of New Olympus.
The Cerberus warriors dipped their heads respectively before the silver and gold-clad woman. It was a far less extreme show of honor than being forced to their knees, as had been the case too many times for them to count. If Hera demanded only a respectful nod, then she couldn't have been too tyrannical a leader.
Baptiste! My God, woman, you're looking quite healthy. I never expected to see you again.
Ever since I got kicked out of Cobaltville, I've been getting quite a bit of exercise.
Hera looked appreciatively toward Kane, a slender eyebrow arching in an unspoken question. Bridget and Kane shook their heads in a synchronized denial.
No, ma'am. Not that kind of exercise.
Really?
Grant shook his head at the brief flash of flirtation between Hera and Kane.
So, no doubt you told your friends my real name?
Yes, Helena.
She only had time to say that she worked with you when you were both archivists.
She didn't say anything about your being sent here to Greece. Memory lapse, Bridget?
I'm going to forget you said that.
Hera smiled, letting herself relax a little in the presence of the four newcomers. Though the men were obviously former magistrates, easily denoted due to their helmets and the Sin-Eater folding machine pistols on their forearms, their presence alongside an archivist and a short little albino wisp of a woman hardly seemed to resemble any death squad dispatched by Baron Cobalt.
I am told you came to New Olympus because you detected a threat to our nation.
Yes. It's a complicated story, but suffice to say that we believe that an entity that used to be one of the barons is operating in the islands.
Hera's wide smile faded, her lips drawn into a tight, bloodless line. She snapped her metal-clad fingers, and one of her assistants held up several drawings on a sketch pad.
Anunnaki? You mean that they were once the barons?
How did you know who those snake faces are?
Because I spent hours going over everything in the structure where I discovered the robot suits you see. Deciphering Sumerian wasn't easy, but it did allow me to uncover more than a few secrets.
An archaeological site?
Sadly, the region containing the site is currently in the hands of New Olympus's greatest enemy, Thanatos. It would have been a joy to show off its wonders to a fellow scientist.
You managed to get a bunch of robots out of there.
Only thanks to the courage of Zeus, though I'm pretty sure you would have known him as Thurmond.
I remember him now.
Me too. Thurmond and Danton were the ones assigned to some kind of top-secret expedition.
The other's name is never spoken lightly within these walls, Kane. He is now Thanatos.
I'm sorry.
It is simply the way of things.
Hera stepped down from her dais and ran her silvery fingers across Kane's shoulder.
You come here as friends, and as such, you deserve a friend's welcome. Come, we have food ready.
It's not the way we're usually greeted.
Hera led them into the feast hall. The big ex-magistrate's eyes widened, looking at tables laden with food, stretching from one end of the hall to the other. One of the tables had no chairs or benches, but the reason for the lack of seating became obvious when the Cerberus explorers glanced back into the hangar to see 24 amputee pilots descending on trapeze rungs down into their wheelchairs. Hera took note of Kane's observation of the elite robot pilots.
Those men and women are good people. They love and are loved by the citizens that they protect. I learned my lesson from the social experiment that was Cobaltville. Rather than leading through force and intimidation, I appeal to duty and compassion. If you are concerned for their physical being, know that they have been selfless, and the Greeks they protect are equally selfless for their sake.
We don't usually run across people this friendly, at least not at first.
Hera slid her arm to hook under Kane's elbow. Kane was surprised at how warm and supple her silver and gold-laden figure was.
Kane, I'm certain you'll find an abundance of friendliness. Your stay will be as welcoming as your arrival in our land.
Kane smiled, despite feeling Grant rolling his eyes at the attention laid upon him by the Queen.
I hope so.
Unfortunately, the first thing that sprung to his mind was a flash of the vision of apocalyptic destruction, followed by a savage swarm of barbaric mutants. Kane kept silent about the doubts that memory brought. He shoved the images aside for the present and figured that he might as well enjoy the party while it lasted. He took his seat at Hera's right hand. Hera barely made it to the corridor, leaving the feasting behind before her pleasant social smile melted into a dour grimace. The buzz of her smart metal skin's communicators lattice annoyed her, but she couldn't talk to Zoo right there where Kane could hear.
Zoo, what the fuck is going on?
Found out why Danton has been avoiding our calls. Kobold's here, and he's in charge of the armor-plated lizard men.
Where are you?
Climbing out of the Tartarus crack. Kobold's down there with Danton, and he's called Lord Marduk now.
And he undoubtedly looks like an Anunnaki, right? I was told that the Barons evolved into those creatures.
He's 7 feet of Greek god sculpture with snake scales. He says he knows how to access the secrets to the other chambers.
The other chambers? My god.
But he wants us on his side. If you don't bend over for old time's sake, he said he'd find himself another Zeus in Hera.
What are the odds against us?
Marduk has a flying saucer and a small army of Anunnaki soldiers that have enough firepower to roast 100 muties. Smart odds say that he's got more soldiers hidden in reserve. With Danton on our side, we might have a chance. But Marduk's keeping him on the very short leash.
It's mine.
Excuse me?
The Tartar's crack is mine, not his.
Marduk says differently. The find is his old vault.
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
Well, right now Marduk has those 9 and is claiming 4,000 years of ownership precedence. We're fucked, especially if he opens up a vault and pulls out some kind of super weapon.
Hera's fingertips gouged deep scratches in the metal bulkhead that she was leaning against for support. The smart metal hardened to protect her from harm. She chewed her lower lip, then glanced back to the feast.
No, no, we're not screwed yet. Get back here and report the presence of Mallet or Marduk or whatever his stupid fucking name is. Just leave out the conversation you had with him about joining or dying. And especially leave out any reference to Danton being my puppet.
Why? If we go after Marduk, he's got the upper hand.
No, we have the advantage here. You weren't here, but we've got 4 visitors who have fought the Anunnaki before, and they've survived. If they can do it, then they can be our ace in the hole.
Visitors? And they fought the Anunnaki? Helena, beautiful. Even if they do manage to take down Marduk, there's a strong possibility that they're going to stumble onto our scam.
Not if they take down Ducky and Danton. They'll either bury everything and clean up our mess, or they'll die trying, and weaken him enough for us to finish him off.
That's why you're the queen, gorgeous.
The goddess.
Hera straightened her spine, looking at the reflection of her face provided by the mirror polish of her armored forearm.
Get here fast, but not too fast. The goddess would like to savor the chocolate torte we're having for dessert.
Hera was still running her tongue over her teeth, tasting traces of chocolate, as she tried to decide how to further spin Zeus's lies to their guests. Zeus had timed his entrance just right on cue for her to enjoy dessert. He provided a breathless accounting of his near-death experience while patrolling the Tartarus crack. Zoo spelled out a tale of mutants and menace accompanied by an energy surge that had taken out his communication system and tore the gear-shaped gun housing from his left shoulder. It was a wonderful fabrication, with evidence concocted on the spot, utilizing a dram of pure orichalcum to duplicate the effects of a glancing energy bolt. She didn't doubt that Zoo could pull off the charade. He'd faked tears for nosy, snooping pilots that he'd eliminated in the mayhem of battle, and had passed himself off as the noblest of heroes for 7 years. With a wry inward grin, she thought of how talented his crooked tongue was. She had to fight off a giggle at her inadvertent innuendo. She transformed the grin into a rictus of anger, keeping the muscles of her lips and cheeks taut to disguise her delight at Zoo's skillful lies.
It's bad enough that Thanatos commands the clone vats, but now he's teaming up with that limp old bastard Kobold?
Marduk is his name now. As we said before, he's no longer the frail specimen that you had known.
Hera did her best to avoid shooting a dagger-laden glance at the flame-haired archivist.
If I didn't know that the snake-faced asshole didn't remember his real origins while he was still Kobold, I'd almost swear that he sent you here to sit on his cache.
Maybe he did. Something I said inspired him to send out our expedition.
Subconsciously, he may have remembered his hidden vault. While the overlords are different from their baronial incarnations in appearance and behavior, there are underlying similarities. They retain some elements of their baronial incarnations. Perhaps the reverse is true, that some traits or experiences were passed down to Kobold in his genetic matrix from Marduk.
Zeus sat hunched over in his wheelchair, beard and hair matted to his face, and scalp with a sheen of sweat. He glanced at Brigid.
Whichever the case, we've got a crisis. Marduk knows the location of weapons even more powerful than Greek fire and the mechanoids.
Normally a journey into the Tartarus crack would be suicide, which is why Zhu alone is allowed to reconnoiter the area. However, these are desperate circumstances.
That's what we're here for. Between the mechanical brigade and our team, we can pull off a lightning raid. That's if you're up to a return engagement, Zeus.
It will take a while, about an hour and a half, to fix my suit and get it back to fighting condition.
That will give us some time to arrange for more formidable armaments for our guests.
Actually, we came in with a more substantial arsenal. We merely cached it in order to provide a less threatening appearance. We didn't think you would take kindly to us carrying weaponry capable of destroying a dropship, as such arms could easily be construed as a threat to giant robots.
Wise and understandable. It wouldn't make sense to battle an Anunnaki or his mutant hordes with only a few small rifles and handguns. I presume you left your weapons at the Oracle where Cain had his vision, correct?
Yes. I'd hate to impose, but with the aid of your pilots, Cain and Grant could finish the round trip to the Oracle in the time it takes to effect Zeus's repairs.
Excellent plan. Diana and Ari, would you aid our visitors?
The two wheelchair-bound pilots nodded in unison.
Grant, what about Brigid and me?
We can handle picking up our extra gear. Just stay here and enjoy a moment of safe haven.
Brigid, you two can explore more of the culture of this civilization.
I can't deny that is a tempting proposition, but...
And even if we do run into trouble, we've got Artemis and Ares for backup.
Well, if you put it that way, just be careful.
Will do.
Hera headed to her quarters, having used the excuse of checking on the effects of the ASP bolt on Zhu's cybernetics port. It was a good way to step away from the visitors and gain access to her comlink to Danton in the Tartarus crack. Now that she knew that Marduk was in Thanatos' base, she imagined she'd have a better chance of getting through to Danton. Zhu pumped the wheels on his chair in an effort to keep up with the impatient Hera.
Gorgeous, what are we doing?
We're letting Marduk know that we're throwing in with him.
But you're sending Cain and the others to fight him. I thought that you wanted them to get Marduk out of your way.
I do. But do you really want Marduk launching the first strike on our base, even if they only utilize Nephilim weaponry? Unless you would like our home torn apart by wrist lasers.
Of course not. So you'll play them off against each other. And whoever wins...
I'll be the one who wins. Nothing is going to make me a slave again.
The visitors from Cerberus don't strike me as the enslaving kind. What if they win?
Then you and I won't be slaves. We'll be heroes. We'll get away with murder when they erase our past. And we become the biggest damn heroes on Earth. It might not be ultimate godlike power, but 7 years of being the good guys has been pretty comfortable, hasn't it?
That's the one thing I always liked about this. As a mag, I was only feared. As Zeus, I'm loved.
Either way, we can't really lose.
Unless they find out that Danton's been working for you, providing an artificial menace all along.
Which is why you personally will make sure that Danton dies. Hush now. I've got to talk to Marduk.
Zhu held his tongue as Hera keyed in her communicator.
This is Helena, Marduk. Do you read me, sire?
Zhu raised his eyebrows at the term sire, causing Hera to sneer at him. The amputee pilot restrained a chuckle.
Ah, hello, darling. I presume Zeus has apprised you of my offer.
And your generosity embarrasses me, my master.
Helena, I presume that Zhu mentioned my warning that you and he were completely replaceable. However, such declarations of fealty are not required. I simply want allegiance.
That transparent, am I? Regardless, I need to give you a fast heads up. Your old friends Cain, Grant, and Brigid Baptiste are here, and they're specifically looking for you and your flying saucer full of Nephilim.
Do they know anything?
Just the story I had Zhu concoct about him spying on you, and you and Danton being all buddy-buddy. So right now, Cain is heading up to an old Oracle ruin to pick up some firepower to use against you and the hordes.
You wouldn't happen to have the coordinates of this Oracle, would you?
Of course, Master. 5 miles west of my present location, right on the coast, the ruined temple. It just wouldn't be a good reunion gift to you if I couldn't hand your wayward pups back to you on a silver platter, would it?
Oh. Darling, I never knew how close you were to my black heart.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to keep up appearances for the mindless drones who think I actually give a crap about them.
I'll have a welcoming committee ready for Kane. It'll be good to kill that pain in my ass.
The radio cut off, and Hera turned to Zoo, who had an odd, thoughtful look on his face.
What's wrong?
I just don't know where we're standing anymore.
Zoo looked down at the stump caps at the end of his thighs.
So to speak.
Where we stand is where you and I have always stood, and that's for the best interests of us. New Olympus only prospers because what's good for us is good for them.
And what if Artie and Airy get hurt?
They'll be missed. But Artemis was in direct disobedience of my orders. She went out looking for trouble.
She went for a patrol.
And she encountered the visitors on her way to the Tartarus holdings. If she hadn't come across those Cerberus people, she might have stumbled across you. And if she knew you were making regular runs to talk to Thanatos...
I'd have had to be the one to execute her.
Hera paused, letting the heat of the argument go, then gave the ex-magistrate a loving, slow kiss. When she pulled back, Zoo gave her a weak smile.
I do care about Diana, but you have to know that we cannot allow ourselves to grow sloppy over even the best sentiments.
I'll just have to grow a set.
You do have a most admirable set. You just forget you have them sometimes.
Kane admitted to himself that Domi had a point. There was a great rush, a feeling of unfettered flight as he sat on the shoulder of 15 feet of robot running and leaping across the countryside at full gallop. A sandcat would have had to wind the long way around while the mobile suits traveled as the crow flies, for want of a better term. Perhaps if he could bring over spare sandcat armor packages, the primitive snap-on plates the robots already wore could be replaced with improved protective panels. Kane was mindful of the vulnerability of pilots to bayonet-wielding savages, and the brave amputee warriors deserved more. A little work by Phil Boyd and the other lunar robotics experts would allow the pilots to man the suits without needing to engage in self-mutilation as well. Throw in artificial bionic legs for those who were amputees.
Stop getting ahead of yourself, dammit.
What's wrong?
Forgot for a minute we'd linked up our contacts. Sorry. Just thinking of the possibilities for the future while I haven't even solved the problem at hand.
Like what Cerberus and New Olympus can do for each other?
Mostly how we could help you out. Of course, we have that whole Thanatos and Anunnaki team to worry about first.
The weapons in Tartarus, especially. Your vision seems especially frightening and relevant now.
A lightning cannon straight out of Zeus's yard sale. The original Zeus, not your guy.
I was wondering what kind of plan you have in mind.
For the Tartarus crack? Well, it's a cavern under a mile of rock. Bring down the roof with a good old-fashioned explosion.
You brought something big enough to do that?
Nope. But where you have doomsday weapons, you undoubtedly have a quantity of doomsday weapon-sized ammunition. If they have the kind of orichalcum that blows up with sunlight, I'd especially like to see how it reacts to a satchel charge.
Oh, that ought to be great. After all, this is an island chain that's only the wreckage remaining above water after an Earthshaker bomb. It's okay, most of us know how to swim.
Oh, right. They set off one of those bastards here. Anyway, we'll figure it out later. There's the ruins. I'll keep thinking of something else. I want to leave this place above water if I can.
I didn't mean to put extra pressure on you. That used to be an oracle?
You know the place?
It's where my family tried to hide it.
Oh.
Yeah. Not only did the mutants fuck up my face and tear off one of my legs, they killed everyone else while I was forced to watch.
It doesn't stop hurting. I just learned to concentrate on the good memories.
Who'd you lose?
My father. He bought me some time to escape.
Artemis and Ares paused at the base of the earthen ramp leading up to the ruins.
It's nice to feel not so alone, Kane. Thanks.
Grant here. I'm picking up a lot of infrared sources up around the Oracle, at least 70.
Kane and the robots glanced up, their own advanced optics kicking in. Ares drew his thermal axes from their forearm housings, and Kane and Grand Sin Eaters launched into their hands as the red forms of scores of mutants appeared before them. Ares whirled his axes and sank into a combat stance.
This is going to get messy, but we can handle it.
An energy bolt lanced down from the Oracle, and Ares' right hand was engulfed in a blaze as the thermal axe in that claw blew to splinters.
Not again!
The Orichalcum hydraulic limb was unharmed, but the next bolt would undoubtedly tear out his cockpit. Asp beams and musket fire rained down from on high.
Time to reload. Outlanders is continued on the next CD.